The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. It is June 15th, 2013. I've got one of my guests calling in now, so I will go ahead and answer it. Let me do that now. Hold on. Oh, he just hung up. Well, I wanted to make a few comments. I imagine they'll call again. I hope that they did not seem to understand, even though I told them that they needed to wait till after the show got started to call. So they've been calling, and I hope my voice is sounding all right, because when I heard the opening to this show, it was very choppy. It was broken up. But this is Carolyn Yeager, and this is Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. And now I'm all messing around all over the place here. Bad beginning here. Very sorry for that. You know, I want to tell you that a few things, but they can call in. My guests today are Joe and Jim Rizzoli, and they're going to be calling separately. But if they want to call any time now, to just go ahead and do so, and let the phone ring till I answer it. They might call in at the same time, which would mean that one of them would have to wait while I answer the one and then go ahead and answer the other. So looks like they're holding off for now. I think by now the 1 minute delay should be passed, and you should all be hearing me. Here's a call. I have to get my Skype page up, see, because I didn't have it up, and now I'm going to answer. So keep. Stay on the phone, fellow. Well, there's one of them. Hi there.
Hey. Hi, Carolyn. This is Joe.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay. Your sound, see, there's something wrong with my sound. I don't know why. It's kind of breaking up, but
I'm on a phone. Well, I'm on a phone itself. How is it all right?
You're on a what phone?
I'm on a regular phone.
Yeah, you're on a landline phone. Yeah, well,
right.
I'm going to ask for listeners to either to send me an email message if they find that there's any problems with the sound, because Tan is not around, so he can't tell me. You hear me fine, I guess?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Yeah, I don't hear you fine, and I think it's I don't know what is wrong with my Skype connection lately. It's been a real problem, but I'm hoping it'll just work itself out. That's what I hope. I don't see any sign from Skype that I'm having any trouble. They don't show it, so we'll see. Let me get back to that. Okay. And let me get back to SkyCon in case, Jim hasn't called yet. All right, I was just going to make
I'm on this phone.
He's on the phone.
Pardon me?
Now he's on the phone.
You know, I'm not able to hear everything you say, so I'm afraid I'm going to be constantly asking you to repeat it.
Can we call you on our cell phones?
Can you switch to your cell phones?
Yeah.
See,
the phone we have is technically, it runs through the internet. So is that causing a problem, you think?
You know, I can't make out what you're saying. It seems to me that I'm going to have to hang up on this show, and I really hate to do that because it's going to mess up a lot of things. And
I'm going to call you on my cell phone and then pick that line, okay?
Well, yeah, I really don't like for you to hang up and then
No, I'm not going to hang up. I'm going to call on the cell phone and see how that sounds, okay?
Okay, but I think you sound fine. It's not. It's the problem, Joe, is not with your phone. The problem is with my Skype connection. That's the problem. See, so you don't need to. You don't need to fix that. Let's let it go for a while and see what happens. Let me just make a few comments here while we're waiting for Jim to call in, and that is that.
No, I'm on the phone. I'm on this phone.
I know you are.
We're on both.
Yeah. You only have one phone?
He's on the extension. I'm on an extension.
Well, he can call on his cell phone.
No. But I mean, can you hear me? I'm just on another extension in the house. That's all.
Oh, are you both here now?
Saying?
You're both here.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I got it now. See, I've had trouble making out all the words you're saying. So, hi, Jim. You're there, too?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you.
Is Jim... Oh, this is awful.
I'm here, too. I'm on the line.
Jim is here.
Yeah, Jim and Joe are both on the line.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, let me say that... Let me just make a couple of... notes I have to make out here that, I've got some people that are not getting my emails, and I want to comment on that because I can't send them anything. So that is that I wanted to thank, Matteo Montanari for his donation. He has a Hotmail account, and, they always return my emails now again. So, and then I just heard from another regular listener who uses MSN as his email address. And they're touchy, too, and he stopped getting my mailings, he said. So I told him that he needed to advise his provider not to block my address, and the same goes for all the Hotmail people. But my reply to this person, Raymond, was returned, so that's why I'm saying it on the air, that this is what people need to do. I don't know if they're instituting new security measures at some of these email providers, or... They make it more difficult for you to get mailings, maybe mass mailings or something. So you need to take care of that on your end. You guys get my mailings, right?
Yeah, we got yours.
Yeah, all right. So I want to say welcome to you both, Joe and Jim Rizzoli from Framingham, Massachusetts. And I'm sure most of the people listening, and we have a good number of listeners now, know who you are. But I wanted to say that, yesterday I was looking for David Bailey's latest show from Thursday night, and I found it already. I found it was posted, so I started listening to it. And lo and behold, his guests were Jim and Joe Rizzoli, who I had already scheduled for today, you guys. So, I thought, well, gee, but it's kind of good because I want to recommend that show to the listeners that you did with David Bailey on, if you go to David Bailey's own podcast site, you can find it best, I think. And because you talked about a lot of things that I would like to not have to go over again today, and also that you were, I forgot to look them up, I think, also that you've been on my program, Heretics Hour, a couple of times in the past. And, in 2010, one of the first shows I did, one of my early shows, was with Jim. And then later I had you on, Joe, and then it seems like I had you on again. But that was, I don't have the exact dates for those, but you can look back. But you have to go to CarolynJaeger.net to find all my Heretics Hour programs. They're not at the White Network, the ones that weren't, unless they were done at the White Network. So, or go to Reason Radio Network website where you can still find all those. So, we've covered a lot about you two and your extensive activities. And I've always been, and most people are really impressed by what you do and all the work that you do. Now, to get back to what you have done, briefly, you've written that your cable shows are on the air again, that were taken off the air 2 years ago. And we covered that when you were on my Heretics Hour program and talked a lot about that. But and Jim had said on David's show that he was doing now 4 shows a week or something like that and going great guns. And so take turns and tell us, you know, what your latest activities are.
Well, the the latest activity had to do with a letter to the editor that I sent to the our local newspaper, the Metro-West Daily News. And what happened there was that somebody put up a post about the surveillance, the thing called PRISM, the PRISM surveillance, and how, you know, what's happening to our phone calls and, you know, all this stuff, the cell phones and all the things related to that, you know. So I wrote a letter to the editor.
Yeah, I have that letter. I have that letter in front of me, and I also linked to it in my announcement for this, for today's show. So if people got that, and they may have clicked on that and seen it too, so that's the letter you're talking about.
Right. And the so the fact of the what remains with that letter is that the Jewish woman Natalie Rosen, you know, she was all, you know, she thought it was terrific that everybody, you know, we have all this surveillance and this and that, you know. So my letter, consequently, in answering her, I said, well, it's the situation exists is not the fact that we have this surveillance. My big question is, who is behind the surveillance? In other words, I said, if you check into, you know, the internet and make, you know, the major corporations, even though I don't mention, you know, Facebook and a lot of, you know, Microsoft and, you know, all these people, a lot of these are backed by either, or were made by, you know, corporations made by Zionist Jews. They're very highly Zionist, you know, Jews, or, you know, the surveillance companies, like, for instance, the airports, TSA, and all the things surrounding those are Israeli companies. And so if you wonder why we're having problems, you know, with surveillance and intelligence, we've got one of the biggest criminal syndicates in the whole world in control.
Yeah. You know, yeah, well, that's a big topic right now that is going on. It's questionable still who this Snowden is, but he probably is legitimate, and they're trying to make out like he isn't. But that's, you know, that's one thing. Now, what about you, Jim? What are you helping Jim? Joe, do you help Jim with his TV programs?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we do specific. Jimmy.
Yeah.
Okay, he's there.
I'm here.
She's asking a question.
No, I know that. I mean, see, I'm the one that really does the editing and produce the show. Joe will give me some of his stuff he does. And then, you know, what I do is I put it all together, and then I make an hour show. So I have 4 shows I have to do, and that, you know, is a lot. I mean, that takes me, you know, like all month to really get things together, because I tweak them, too. If something comes in, if I see on the internet, I can always edit it and put it in at the last minute before I submit the show. So, I mean, I have quite a bit to do. And then my YouTube site, I have a YouTube site. If you go under JJ Rizzo, JJRIZO, I put my short YouTubes on there. And then I have another site called DailyMotion.com. And if you do a search for the JJ Rizzo again, I have videos there. So I do a lot of video. I mean, that spends a lot of my time. I'm doing this every day. Not a day that goes by that I'm not doing something with my video. So it's quite an enterprise, that's for sure.
Right. Well, that's what I'd like to ask is what kind of effect do you think it's having? You know, it's I'm not trying to question you know, what sounds like sometimes like I'm criticizing what, you know, if people or what they're doing is effective enough, because I know what I do. I do what I do, and I'm not going to do anything different. I can't do anything different. And if it's not all that effective, well, there's, you know, that's just the way it is, because everybody does what they feel motivated and comfortable in doing. And I don't, you know, and if they were told by other people, well, you should do it this way, or why don't you do it that way, and you were trying to follow other people's directions, you probably wouldn't keep doing it, or you wouldn't be as effective because it's not your own ideas and your own motivation and so on. You know, so, but with that said, well, I'm just asking. Go ahead.
You have to do, you have to do what's comfortable with you. Now, I'll just tell you what I did. You had a show that you interviewed, who was the Nazi gassing guy, Berg, is his name?
Yeah.
Right. So what I did with one of your shows, I actually made a video out of it, and I actually played it. So, in other words, what you do and what all these other people do with voice, you can combine it with video. So it works out just fine.
Well,
so,
you took your pictures, too.
Yeah, I took your pictures. I took everything you had in your book. I did everything, and I made a video with it. So, and I was able to play it. So, to me, that's really good. You know, I mean, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Audio is just as good, you know, if you put it together and get something with it.
My take on this, too, Carolyn, is like you said, we all have a place in the arrangement. Like you are a lot of a good in my life for the information that you give. And what we do is we take it back to our towns. You see what I'm saying? And like then we apply it to our own personal town and the things that happen. So we use it and we put it out through you know, our cable channel and get that information out that way. So that's how in other words, we take it and use it here, and we are the result of that persecution, the Jewish persecution that happens as a result of that. Like, you know, the articles that come in the newspaper, God knows what they're doing at cable, you know, trying to get us off the air. There's probably letters flying back and forth from the ADL and all sorts of stuff that we don't really know about. They could be down at the State House trying to pass new laws, you know, trying to ban, you know, information. But, you know, obviously you ended, I was listening to one of your shows today where you ended it saying that, you know, trying to make all these laws in Europe, you know, changing freedom of speech. And the last thing you said in the thing was that we can't do that in America because we have First Amendment rights. And, you know, unless they get rid of our First Amendment rights, as of now in America, we have the freedom to say the things we want. And I think I emailed you, too, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, stating the facts about criticism, ridicule, and humor. Did you get that, Carol? I'm not sure if you got that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Today.
Yeah, I've got okay. This. I got that in front of me right now. But let me say first.
Hmm? Yeah, that no. Go ahead.
Back to the ways that you work. It's really, you know, I think you are among the very few who are really operating outwardly in your own community. Christine Miller comes to mind in her own different way. She also is quite out in the open in her own community. Speaking, you know, anti-Holocaust, running perennially for the school board so that she has a voice to speak and, you know, everybody knows who she is. And she does all that in her community. And the fact that, what you do with your videos that go on the internet, you know, on your channels and on YouTube and so on. So you reach everybody, but you also make a big impact in your own community, which is, just ideal. It's just ideal. And it's a model for what people could be doing. But, you know, most of us just don't want to do it. I don't want to get into, you know, beating us all up. But, you know, we just don't want to go out among people like that, you know.
I said, you have the knack to do what you do, and you do it very, very well. That's why we listen to you. And we have the knack, or we like to put video, or we like to take it further, you know, and in the community. It's just like Christine Miller, you know, she writes to the newspaper. I mean, boy, the stuff that she's going through. I mean, she's a hero in my book. I mean, it's the fact that she's like by herself. I mean, I bet you there's nobody on her side. I mean, she's like us in Framingham. There's nobody defends us, basically. What we say is it goes out there, and basically it's like you hear silence, or, you know, you're going to get the Jews going nuts, you know, writing columns against what we say, you know. And so, you know, this is it. People are doing it. Like I said, I've read Christine's stuff. I've got a couple of her books. I've seen her, what she's done in her town. I mean, I think it's terrific. But look at what she's going through. I mean, yeah.
It's so inspiring to find the few people who actually do that. Well, with you guys, so you've been, Jim's been basically, he's the front man there for the cable shows, and you've been back on that cable network for what, over a year now, or how long?
Yeah, a couple of years, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while,
hasn't it? I think we've been on for about 2 years now, so we've been doing good. No complaints.
Well, you're doing well. So the reasons that they got you off and now you came back, they've kind of given up on fighting you, or what do you think is going on?
I think they came to the realization is they can't stop content. And that's what people have to realize. And if the cable, because we can really go a lot, you know, further with this, with the courts, taking them to court and suing them. Because the fact is, you can't stop content. Now, I mean, they took our show off the air because they said we were not going according to the way the program should be produced, which was not true. But anyway, now everything's fine in our production, and the only thing that they have, you know, that is a problem with them, even though they can't do anything about it, is content. And my content, I mean, if you see the stuff I'm putting up there, it is just absolutely, it's like getting punched in the face. That's the only thing I can say. I mean, the stuff that I have on there now.
I wince when I see it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we wince. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's like, whoa, yo. But it's up, you know, and it's done in a respectful way. I put disclaimers up. I say, you know, what's coming up next, it might upset a lot of people. If you don't like it, then make your own cable show to refute it. You know, so, you know, anyway, it's up now, and that's good. I can't complain there.
Do you know how many viewers you have of these shows? You know, do they let you know, or do they keep track of that? Well, do they have a way of knowing?
We know when we go into, like, McDonald's and people say, hey, I saw your show.
Yeah, people don't want to admit they watch it. That's the only problem.
Well, sure. You know, how big is Framingham?
67,000 people.
Largest town in the United States.
Yeah, that's pretty big. And then does this cable channel go over a larger area than that?
Well, it does take in a couple other towns, I heard. So, you know, you probably it has the capability of probably going out to maybe, I would think, 80,000 people, you know. The shows are in prime time. I mean, my show comes on Friday night at 9 o'clock, Saturday night at 9 o'clock. So, I mean, they're on prime times, and in the morning sometimes, you know. So they're all going to see it at some point in time. I mean, we even have a show on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. I think it's 11, I think. And, you know, that's a good time for people, you know, on Sunday getting up. There's one on at 7 in the morning. You know, which is another good time because people are going to work. So, you know, we cover the whole gambit of when the show can be seen. And pretty much, they all have the same content in them of you know, it might be different show, different things, but hard-hitting information, the same type of hard-hitting information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's good. Well, you know, this FCC thing, that Joe sent, it does say that the this is the public broadcasting guidelines for cable. It does say the First Amendment's guarantee of freedom of speech protects programming that stereotypes or otherwise offends people with regard to their religion, race, national background, gender, and other characteristics. It also protects broadcasts that criticize or ridicule established customs, and institutions, including the government and its officials. If there is to be genuinely free speech, people must be free to say things that the majority may abhor, not only things that the majority finds tolerable or congenial. That's just great, isn't it? And this is exactly,
absolutely.
This is exactly what the Jews would like to get rid of. The Jews as a organized group of as they organize themselves, this is exactly what they want to get rid of and not allow it, at least not if it's directed at them.
Right.
Correct?
See, when they got us off the air the first time, see, the problem was they were very, very typically Jewish sly. They didn't hit us technically with content. They hit us with technicalities of how we produce the show. The cable company has a contract thing, a thing of how you're supposed to follow the procedures to produce shows. They've changed it, I think, 3 or 4 times since we've come on. In other words, like they have all these rules about putting introduction and saying who you are and what show number. So what they did was they just started making up the rules as they went along and hit us with all these infractions. So when you read the newspaper, oh my God, 21 violations. In reality, all they had to do was sit down with us and say, listen, you had a problem here. Can you fix it? But no, see, they hit us with all these. So when it eventually came out to the public, everybody's saying, oh my God, what did they do? You know, they got all these violations. And so they hit us with infractions of their bylaws. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
Well, what can you do? I mean, there's nothing you could do. That's what it says now in writing, but they haven't hit us with anything since because we followed every, you know, cross the T's, dot the I's, and now they, what are they going to hit us with? Content. But they can't do that because you just read, you know, the FCC rules and regulations about content. They can't tell you what to put on the air.
Yeah.
It's not nudity and pornography. It's not anything like that. And so they're really stuck right now, you know, and this is why we don't know where they're going.
Well, has there been the same kind of campaign in the newspaper, you know, of these people, Jewish people, most of them writing letters and so on and complaining about your programs? Or, you know, has that stopped too? Have they just decided to forget about it, you think?
No, here's what happens. See, that first of all, they don't want to bring attention to the show, okay? So that's why you're not really hearing much happening. So they would rather, you know, just grit their teeth and just be mad, because if they bring it all up, it's all going to come back into their face and explode even more, and more people are going to watch it. That's how it works. You see, it's like giving advertising to a product. You see what I'm saying? So, but what they do is, like every now and then, you at a town meeting, you know, someone will get up and say something alluding to us, you know, and what we're doing. They won't mention our names, but they'll say, well, there are some people in this town that are anti-Semitic, and they're, you know, doing this and doing that, you see, but they won't mention us by name. So that's how slyly they try to do it. And then, you know, with articles in the paper, they might write in. But I noticed they're trying to stay away from it because they don't want other people to see
yeah,
it. So
right.
They'd rather do that way.
Well, you know, there's all this activity been going on, an anti-Semitism campaigns and so on in Europe, and also like Abe Foxman is working on them here in the United States too, but he works all over the world. And I had this article that just came out. You know, it's nothing outstanding. It's just the usual stuff. But you know, I sent it to you that Germany's parliament just passed a resolution. Now it's just a resolution. It's not a law. But the Jews are big, aren't they, on having governments or lawmaking bodies pass resolutions, and then they, from that resolution, they try to, you know, make further progress on it. And this resolution said that the Germany's parliament was committed to renewed action against anti-Semitism, and they condemned Israel-related anti-Semitism and terrorist organizations like Hezbollah, and it was passed with the support of the Christian Democratic Union, now that's Merkel's party, the Social Democratic Party, that's the left, and the Free Democratic Party, another left, and the Greens that are far, far left. And so, you know, that's how these things happen. But in the United States, it's not as easy. And this is one, it is true that this is a big difference we have from there because they don't have the kind of laws. And even in Canada, they don't have the kind of First Amendment right that we do, and that's held so still, you know, as kind of a sacred thing in this country. So we have to be aware of that and how it might, you know, it probably is kind of fragile. I mean, we have to really work at protecting it, because if it weren't for that, you probably wouldn't be able to do these kind. We wouldn't be able to have the stuff that we have on the
air. I'll tell you something funny that happened a couple months ago. When I put my show on, that really, I had one piece that was, I think it was by William Pierce in it, Dr. Pierce, and it really blasted the Jews. I mean, it was cringy. I put it up anyway. Well, a week later, I had the FBI at my house.
Yeah.
They came to make a visit. So, no, we had a nice talk. They were nice guys. They were making it look like, they were here for my benefit, but I really don't think so. They said, well, we're kind of worried. We think, that someone might be targeting you or this or that. I really kind of doubt it if the FBI cares about me. I think they were here just to feel me out to see where I was coming from. And I had a nice conversation with them. And they saw that, I'm a reasonable guy. I'm not this fanatical, nutty person, crazy person. So anyway, they left, and they said they were going to come back, but I never heard back from them. But I really, really think that someone put a bird in the FBI's mind to say that I was doing something horribly anti-Semitic, blah 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 blah, and they just had to come and investigate it. But it was probably because of my show. You see, that's probably, and they, there's nothing they could do. We were talking about the show, and they said, well, yeah, there's nothing, there's nothing bad about that. You can't stop people from saying this and that. And, they knew that. So it was just a wasted trip for them. But, again, an attempt to intimidate us through the services here, FBI, one of them or whatever, to stop us,
Yeah. Okay.
That's what happened there.
All righty. I am having trouble hearing. I'm going to... when it comes time to for the second hour break to start, I'm going to ask you, I'll say this now, to hang up before the break, and I'm going to hang up my Skype connection, and then I'm going to reconnect with Skype. But we can't do it during the break time, or at least I don't think I can. And so I will, but I think I can reconnect. I'm not sure what I can do. Darn it. Maybe we'll do it all before, and then and see how it works, and then because I don't want to go on through the whole show, but I don't want to change it right now. So I've got an article here. I wonder if you had seen. Do you ever talk about circumcision on your cable shows? Have you ever talked about that much?
No, we haven't. Even though I've listened to quite a few shows that dealt with it. I mean, I've heard yours. I've heard all yours. we haven't dealt with that, no.
Okay.
Not that we wouldn't, but I mean, it hasn't come up as a topic, what I'm saying?
I wonder how that would go over. There's the World Health Organization has approved an Israeli-developed circumcision device, and they're really promoting it. They promote the idea. They've got the whole World Health Organization promoting this idea, and all these major, vaccine-type companies and the people that support them and so on. Circumcision helps to prevent AIDS, which is just stupid. It's just stupid because AIDS is based on, the sexual encounters and so on. And it has nothing to do with the, and circumcision doesn't necessarily help that. It's such a minor number that they are fraction that they have been able to come up with, but that's enough, they say. Oh yeah, this would save a few lives, so everybody should be circumcised. So they've come up with this non-surgical circumcision device that could be used throughout Africa, and then it could be used elsewhere also. It's disposable and easy to use, made of rubber bands that obviates the need for anesthesia, stitches, or sterile setting. And it was approved by the World Health Organization recently. And this is made by an Israeli company, and it's being promoted. The Israeli startup company is Circ MedTech. I would think that this would be of interest to people. Of course, as soon as you say it's only going to be used in Africa, then everybody says, "Oh, well, that's okay. They need to do that there, so they don't worry about it, really. They don't care." But that just goes to show how this gigantic things like our World Health Organizations and so on are just functioning, catering to Israel, that tiny little country.
Well, I think that's all related to also the skin they get from a circumcision and what the products they use and the money they make, I mean, from that, too. You know what I'm saying? I think there's a money thing involved in that situation, too, you know? That's why they would promote it, because obviously they could have a lot of circumcised, you know, pieces of skin, and that could be a very lucrative business that we don't know about, but, you know, that's something that you wonder why they're doing it. And, you know, there's got to be a, you know, sometimes there's always a what's the reason for it, and it could be money, you know?
So there's people who say that it's all about money, and other people who say it's all about political control of the world so that Jews will be safe everywhere and will be able to have a Jew-friendly world, you know, and then be able to make the money they want and so on. So yeah, it all goes together.
I agree. No, I mean, well, they look at it too. I mean, circumcision goes back to the days of Abraham, so that's their heritage. You know, that's their heritage. I mean, personally, I mean, I think it's just a choice between a family if they want to decide. It shouldn't be all made a law. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I didn't quite get that. Sorry.
No, I mean, I don't think it should be made into like a law that they should do it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But, you know, like I said, if the Jews are behind it, there's always something more to it that people don't normally see, you know?
You know, there's continues to be this unwillingness of people to look at the Jews in the same way they would look at any other group. What do you have to say about that? Anything? I mean, it's clear, and even in Henry Ford's International Jew, they were saying, back at that time, this was 1920 and 1921, making very clear statements that if non-Jews were to do such and such a thing, they would be highly criticized. But if Jews can do it, and nobody says anything to them, you know,
let me just—I mean, I don't know if I probably sent you this. I'm not sure, but see, my opinion of the Jews is, you know, I'm a biblical man, and when I take all of the Bible and what's happened with them, you know, the Bible is even prophetic of what would happen to the Jews because they left God. Eventually, in a certain amount of scriptures in the Bible. If you look in the King James Bible and you do a search for the word by word, you know, by, you know, dash word, the Bible says that the Jews have become a byword amongst the nations. In other words, when you heard the word Jew, something would immediately come up into your mind, like, you know, cheaters, liars, you know, there's something about that would happen to them as a people. And that's exactly what's happened to the Jews. They've technically become a byword amongst the nations in fulfilling Bible prophecy. Now that's the Old Testament. Now the New Testament mentions, I believe, in the book of Thessalonians, and it talked about the persecution of the Christians in 1 Thessalonians 2:14-15. You know, the apostle was bringing up about how, you know, they were persecuting the Christians and this and that. But he makes a statement that's really interesting in the end of the scripture. It says, they have persecuted us, and they please not God in a contrary to all men. I mean, that's the what the Bible says about the Jews. They are contrary to all men.
Mm-hmm.
So the legacy that the Jews have from a Christian viewpoint is not good. And lastly, the Bible, the book of Revelation chapter 2 verse 9 and 3 verse 9 talks about people who call themselves Jews but are from the synagogue of Satan. So the Bible leaves us with a very, very bad distaste. Could you go over one more? Jesus said, your house, in Matthew chapter 23, I believe 29, he says, your house would be abandoned. That's when he was on the earth and he was talking about them as a nation. He says, your house would be abandoned. So basically, the Jews' life ended in the Jesus era, and that was it. And all the genealogical records, see, people don't understand that in the Bible itself, in order for the Jews to exist as a nation, they had to have genealogies to prove the existence of what families and everything they came from. And that worked all fine up until the days of Jesus, because they never accused Jesus of a bad genealogy. But when Jesus said, your house was abandoned, that would indicate then now it was their genealogy would end. When the Romans came in the year 70 CE, ransacked the city, destroyed every single thing. It said a stone would not be left upon a stone. All the genealogical records were burned, so there is no Jew on this earth that can prove any genealogical link back to the nation of Israel. The people are a rogue people, and that's it. You know, as far as I'm concerned, they're just a rogue people.
Yeah.
In God's eyes,
they're a rogue people, right? Well, now taking it from there. They also say in the International Jew, and this is in the, you know, early 1919, 1920, and 1921 and so on. They also say that they emphasize again and again the fear of the Jews, that the problem
exactly.
that people have is the fear of the Jews. And, you know, when we think of why people are afraid of the Jews, it's their power. And it's their financial power, but also their power because they're so organized. You know, they've always functioned as an organized unit, and that gives them a power beyond all the other groups of people who just don't do that and can't get their people to do that, seems like. We have trouble organizing as a group, even amongst people who feel the way we do. There's all kinds of variations and then infighting. I want to get into some of that in the second hour, but they do. And so, you know, you think, well, when did they get so rich? I mean, if the fear of the Jews went back to biblical times, and it was mentioned in John, the Gospel of John, right, that they were hiding in the upper room for fear of the Jews, the Christians were. Of course, at that time, you could say, well, you know, the Jews, that's a different story, I guess, that the Christians had been Jews and now they were Christians. So, but see, then we get in trouble with the Christian identity people. Well, anyway, you know, this could, you know, there was fear then, and it couldn't have been because they were so wealthy. But so it really goes, I think the bigger reason that the Jews have the power they have is their ability to organize themselves and make everybody follow, you know, network and follow along, more than
right.
the wealth that they have. That's how they got their wealth. But you could kind of take away their wealth, but how do you take away that tendency that they have to work as a single unit?
Well, I'll give you an example of that. You know, in Boston, I drive for a living, And I drive by countless number of old synagogues that the Jews used to be in. And they're not in these anymore because they left Boston back in the 60s. What happened was, you know, the neighborhoods were they started bringing blacks into the neighborhoods, and even it was too much for the Jews to handle, and they started, redlining the districts in Boston. And the Jews, as a whole, you brought this up very nicely, Carolyn, as a whole, they do things as a community. They just pulled out of Boston. I mean, there's whole sections of Boston. I drive down side streets. There's apartment buildings. It was all Jewish. All Jewish. All these beautiful buildings, huge synagogues. And they just said, see ya. And they took off and they got out of Boston. And because they worked together as a tribe for their own advantage. And here, of course, they cry diversity and this and that. But they only look out for themselves. And that's why, you know, Boston now, the people in these synagogues are like other churches now. And they've taken them over, they've converted them to, church centers or this or that, So they do work as a tribe. Boston's a perfect example. They just pulled out back in the 60s and said, see you later. And they took off to all these little side towns in Massachusetts that we now have, like Canton and Sharon and, Medford, all these towns all in Massachusetts,
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they do.
Yeah, well, I think that's the secret that's the main secret of these people, because it's been there from the beginning. It's always been there. It's one constant I think you have to feel like it's a necessity. People always say if things get bad enough for us for whites that they will get together and function as they need to. But, I'm concerned that when that time comes, that there will be no, we won't be a people who are looked. See, the Jews, for all that they say they've been persecuted, that's really not true. They were always given a lot of understanding, and they're always, okay, we'll do this for you. Okay, we'll let you come back. Okay, we'll pass these laws and let you do this and that. They're always under the hand, under the control or under the authority of usually fair-minded white people or even Muslim people and so on, who are far more fair-minded than they are. And so they were able to keep coming back and not be destroyed. But I think things could come to the point where we would just be destroyed, because there would be no grace or mercy for us once we were ready to finally organize enough. So these are problems that I think we need to really understand. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think people understand either. See, all the Christians, in America, what they've done is they've acquiesced to the Jews. They let these people just take over. So right now, our morality now isn't dictated technically by Christianity or morals of Christians. It's dictated by the morals of the Jews, by their Talmudic interpretations and how they see life. So man, as you see when they're coming out with all these bullying laws and everything, that's not coming through our eyes as Christians or whatever we are. It's coming through the Jewish thing, how they see the world, and everybody's a bully according to them. And that movie Defamation that was put out, really interesting. It showed an interesting point, because he was saying, well, can you show us anything that people have, how they've defamed the Jews, what's happening with the ADL? And that guy couldn't find anything on the computer. Murder of Jews, or a whole school bus of Jews killed or something. He couldn't find anything. And it was like a laugh. Just sitting back saying, there's no persecution of the Jews. Nobody's trying to defame the Jews. And yet that's why they have the Anti-Defamation League. They don't have anything to do anymore. So, you know, now they're coming after everybody, you know, Christians, I mean, the, you know, Southern Poverty Law Center, they're coming after, I mean, it used to be just, you know, coming after black people who don't like blacks. Now they come after Christian identity people. They come after, I mean, the result is we're on the ADL's list of hate groups.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, it's us PLC's hate groups, and we're also mentioned in the ADL. I mean, the Rizzolis, the nicest people on the whole earth, and the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center has us on their list. Amongst David Duke and all these, you know, Messenger and all these big names, it's incredible. But they're the ones that are really the defamers. They defame us.
Yeah. They don't have all their persecution and all their problems and all their worry about bias and so on is all invented, you know, because nobody's ever really done it, and only because, and what it has been, is because their crimes against the other people became so great that the people weren't going to stand for them anymore. And unfortunately,
exactly.
Our people have stood for way too much. When you think about the way they brought in, they kept down European peoples in these various different areas, and just kept them poor and stole from them. And their usury was so incredible. When you read these, you know, they would get up to 80% interest and 120% and so on. And you wonder why these people, but they would put certain, I guess people got into a situation. And it probably wasn't all that hard to do. I mean, didn't mean that they were completely irresponsible, but that where they just absolutely needed some money right now. So they would do it. And maybe they weren't, maybe they didn't understand how much they had, the way they had to pay it back. I don't know, but it's just, it's unbelievable. Of course, that's not allowed today, but it was then. And so, you know, this is, but I want to thank Stu and William for writing in and telling me that the audio is just fine. I was sure, I knew it was, but the problem is mine isn't. So in a few minutes, we're going to do something about it for the second half. But, you know, there's this story about, where have we got it up here? Just for the last few minutes of this hour, you know, there's this fellow, because this is in the United States, in Minnesota, they're now after this. Now here's the Jews again working at this. They're now after this 94-year-old Ukrainian man. I think he's originally Ukrainian, Michael Karkok, who they have discovered. And this is the AP. And you know, one of these writers of this story. Well, I should finish. They've discovered through deep searches that he supposedly was head of a Galician division that was under the National Socialists in 1944-45, something like that. And there's also his name showed up concerning the 1944 Warsaw Uprising. So now they say he might be tried in Germany. He could be tried in Poland by the Poles, because he was, you know, he might have been involved in the Warsaw Uprising. And they've got these laws over there that, like in Germany, they made them so liberal that even if you're just a commander of a unit, even though there's no evidence that you yourself perpetrated anything, well, then you can be held responsible for it, and you can be, you know, given a sentence as though you yourself murdered hundreds or thousands of people or whatever they come up with.
Yeah, that was in our paper today.
Yeah, and so there, I'm sure. Yeah, good. So, you know, and the Wiesenthal Center is behind this, too. And there, but you know, here's the thing that's interesting to me. When I was doing those things with the AP and Elie Wiesel's tattoo that this AP reporter, Verena Dobnik, said that she saw, that he showed her his tattoo while she was interviewing him for an article. It was just last year. And I questioned that, and I wrote and wrote and I wrote and wrote to the AP and called the AP, and some other people were doing it too. And they just, you know, brushed it all off. I could not, they did not make this woman respond to me or answer anything, and they didn't answer anything. And this Randy Hirschaft is the person who wrote, has written a bunch of articles with her about Holocaust subjects, and they're into it. You know, they're into proving, you know, talking about the Holocaust all the time. And he's one of the writers for this article. And it says that AP did its own search looking, you know, delving in, looking for information about this Karkok. So the AP, you know, I guess they think they're investigative reporters, but they're searching and searching at the behest probably of the Simon Wiesenthal Center and so on to find evidence of these, that they can, you know, find something on these men who are still alive in their 90s, trying to live out their life. And at the end of this, it was so sickening. Well, they say a neighbor said, "For me, this is a shock to come because he's known this guy. He's his next door neighbor. He likes him and so on." He says about him, "To come to this country and take advantage of its freedoms all these years while he had this Nazi past, you know." Well, he's just totally against the guy now. So, but anyway, fellows, you know, I'm going to ask you to hang up now, and I'm going to hang up my Skype connection. And then after the break music is over, I want you to call back in again. Okay?
Okay. Yep.
Because I just can't hardly hear well enough at all. It's my Skype connection
right.
That's wrong. But in order to break it, okay. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm back on the air. Now, I hope you can all hear me as the sound is going. Dead air ends. Okay. Don't have dead air. All right. This is Saturday afternoon with Carolyn, and I wouldn't mind getting another email from people letting me know that you're definitely hearing me. But now I'm waiting for Joe and Jim to call in again. I don't have anything to listen to, so I can't tell how my own sound is. But I will just this will just have to do. So if they call in now, you know, anytime, I'll answer the call. I'm sorry for this. You know, the Skype has been wanting me to update, and I just for the last couple of days, and I haven't wanted to do it this time. I wonder if they're punishing me because I haven't updated the way they want me to. I don't know why I'm having such bad Skype connections just for this program. Okay. Let me see. They probably are waiting to hear me again. There's a 1 minute delay, so that would be the reason for this. In this half, I'm going to, if I hear all right, I'm going to ask them to talk with me a little bit about this Jim Fetzer business that has come up and see how we do with that. But I don't want to get started until. Okay, guys, you can call in now. I'll be able to take your call. All right. Well, I'll say that I don't see any call coming in yet. So when I do, I will. Well, you know what happened was here they are. Okay, here they are. Probably they just waited till they could hear it again. Now let me get Skype on again. Okay. This looks like it was done right.
Okay, I'm back.
Great. I'm back too, and I think I hear you just fine now.
Oh, you sound really good.
Say something.
Oh, yeah, okay, talking.
Yeah, I can hear you good. You sound good.
Well, you know, you guys are still breaking up for me. I don't know what the heck is going on here, but maybe I just needed to close my whole computer down, which I didn't do, and all of that stuff. So we'll just have to make do the best we can. The listeners hear everything, and I can basically make out what you're saying, but if my responses aren't too great, that is the reason.
Well, I could call in on my cell phone and see if it makes a big difference.
Oops, it's not the telephone. It's
yeah, but Carolyn, our telephone is hooked in through the internet. It's not a landline. It's an internet connection using the landline. So it's almost like we're talking on Skype. Technically, you know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna call in on my cell phone and see if it makes a difference in my.
Okay, why don't you do that?
All right, go ahead, do that. Yeah,
I'm going to call and see if it makes a difference. Because then, if it is, we'll call it on ourselves, and then we'll.
Okay, here. Let me take this call. 236.
I'm calling on the cell now.
Yeah. Okay, I just answered it. Now it's. I don't know. It says, you know, you're coming in on the chat. I don't know if. See, I don't understand this. It's got you. It says something unusual.
It's ringing. I mean, it's ringing.
Well, I already answered it, but it says chat.
Oh.
It didn't work. Well, let me try it one more time. It's still here. 2, 3, 6, 3, 4. In progress. Okay, you should be on now.
How does that sound?
Yeah,
is that any different?
No, it's very bad for me on my end.
All right. All right, well, I'll put on the cell phone.
It's kind of an echoey, too. No, so Jim's on the landline and you're on the cell phone, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm using it now, but you said it's not working.
Yeah, no, that's not good. Better hang up that call.
Yeah, I mean, I can hear you good.
I know, and the listeners hear us, but it's a problem on my end, and I haven't solved it, and I don't want to take the time to solve it since I can hear well enough. So,
hold on a second. If I'm on this one, you can hear me better on this one?
No, it just breaks up. It's you know, I only hear part of what you're saying. It keeps chopping out pieces of
it. It sounds better on myself.
It sounds like an echo, Joe.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Okay, I'll hang up the phone. All right, well,
okay. Anyway, boy, ladies and gentlemen, let me see. We've still got a lot of listeners are hanging in there. They want to hear something interesting. So we'll keep going.
I want to make a point about that sure. Nazi guy you're talking about. In the paper today, we got this in the paper today, and it mm-hmm. says, and this is really what bugs me, it says, though records do not show that Kharkov had a direct hand in war crimes. So if he didn't have a direct hand in the war crimes, why are they going? I mean, there's no need for this. He had no direct hand in the war crimes, and this is just bullying on amongst the Jews just to get an old 90-something-year-old man and keep this all in the. You know, they got what do they got for witnesses? People that are, you know, they got to believe people that's possibly lying. I mean, how can you prove anything? I mean, this is outrageous.
Oh, it's terrible. But they say, let's see what I can't. See where I read that. It was said on here that that according to the law that they have, where is this law?
They say initial suspicion. As long as there's initial suspicion, impossible involvement. See, that's outrageous. I mean, just outrageous.
Yeah. Well, somebody just sent me a Skype message, Don, saying that he could hear everything fine. That's good. It said that, even if they didn't prove that you yourself committed any crimes, they could, I can't find it now. Naturally, when I look for something, in an article,
yeah,
you think you'd see it.
I got the article out of the paper.
There's some little thing stuck in somewhere that they could find the person guilty. Where is that? Sorry.
Because in Germany, it says they can be charged with war crimes even if their direct involvement in atrocities cannot be proven.
Right. Right. You know, in Germany, they can do a lot of things that you couldn't do here.
Well, for the United States to even give this guy up, I'm assuming this guy's a U.S. citizen, right?
Yes.
For the United States to even give this guy up is treason, as far as I'm concerned. Treason.
Oh, it is. I am too. I mean, it's kind of terrible, and it's all here we go again. It's at the behest of the Jews.
Here we go again. Yep.
Who wants this? But the Jews want this.
Right.
Simon Wiesenthal Center.
Yep. They're very.
And it was the AP that uncovered the wartime activities of this man and this Galician unit and so on. And they went to the authorities, and they're prompting the German authorities to get involved in it. And, you know, German law is that if anything shows that these people would be guilty of anything, they have to carry on a prosecution about it. They can't, you know, decide not to. That's their law. And so Ephraim Zuroff of the Wiesenthal Center, you know, once again, is able to accomplish all this because of the United Jewish control of media and the judiciaries everywhere and everything. I mean, it's just...
Well, you know, Carolyn, in Boston, there's a man named Stephen Ross. His son, the older man, he's a Holocaust survivor, and his son is on the school committee, and I guess he's running for mayor or something. I think they're both named Stephen Ross. I'm not sure, but the Stephen Ross that I heard give his Holocaust talk, he said he was on a train, you know, one of these cattle cars, and he said that somebody stole his water or food or something, and that he smothered the man to death. Now, why can they kill people and get away with it and nobody else? I mean, it's outrageous. He admitted it. I thought I had this on audio videotape. I can't find it because it was some years ago. But I remember him giving this spiel, this speech at this conference. And that's what he said. He sat on a guy and smothered him to death and killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. They can get away with murder and anything.
Well, that's right. And as I was saying from the International Jew, they said that they were talking about something else, but they said, you know, this is Jews doing all this. And if it was not Jews, people would be thinking terrible things about it and doing something about it. But if it's Jews, they get away with it.
Right.
So, yeah, and then this, they have this so-called evidence from a man who, Vasil Malozhinsky, who was a part of this unit, who later told Soviet investigators, what does it mean when you tell Soviet investigators after the Soviets have taken over, and they want to hear some, you know, atrocity stories, and so you tell them some, right, to get off the hook from them. And so he told these Soviet investigators that they were to directed to liquidate all the residents of this village as a reprisal attack for killing one German SS officer, although he did not say who gave the order. Well, what kind of a testimony is that? No good, you know, the kind the Soviets used. But now they're gonna pull that out now and use stuff that is shown that the Soviet. Well, I don't know if anybody officially admits that the Soviet testimonies were all crap, you know. But and then he says, oh, it was like in a trance, setting fire, shooting, destroying, trying to excuse himself. He didn't know what he was doing, you know. But they were ordered to do this. Well, he was just getting himself off the hook. But this is the AP. What's important to me is that the AP is involved in this. They're involved in all this pushing Holocaust and pushing everything the Jews want to do big time. And most of our news comes from the AP. If it doesn't, it comes from Reuters, and they're known to be they even originated as a Jewish company.
Right.
I think maybe Israeli. But the only good thing, I think, is that this man is 94. Now, it's terrible to destroy his reputation and so on. But, you know, this brings up a lot of publicity. It should. We should all be talking about it. And it makes people angry. They think, now, why would they pick on this 94-year-old man? And it doesn't make the Simon Wiesenthal Center look good or their, the AP or anything, or the people who are doing it. I think there has to be some sympathy, although this next-door neighbor of his doesn't show any, although, you know, the people who write this story, they're, you know, these Jews are writing the story, so they're going to write it the way they want.
Yeah. Well, I find the Jews are very vindictive, you know?
What?
The Jews are very vindictive.
Yes, yes, it is. It is. Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit. I don't want to spend too much time on this, and it won't take too much time if I just put it out there. I'd like to get your response to some of this. I don't know if you two know Jim Fetzer. You know who Jim Fetzer is?
Yeah, I do. I listen to a ton of his stuff.
Sort of. You know, he has he's a conspiracy researcher and made a big name in the JFK assassination disclosures and so on. And then went on, and then he's gotten real big in 9/11. But he's also called. He's got a radio program called The Real Deal. I was a guest on his program, and he seems to have forgotten that now. In 2010, after I started that Elie Wiesel Cons the World website, and he asked me to come on and talk about that, and he was very agreeable about it. Until, as somebody who commented in a, let's see if I can, commented in a comment on my own Voice of Reason, when I replayed that interview, part of it, that would fit in one hour on my Heretics Hour show a couple months later. And this commenter, Morton, said, James Fetzer seems like an honest and open-minded person. And he did. And I felt the same way then. But it was embarrassing to listen to his biased and emotional defense of Jews when Carolyn opened the can of worms. And that's true. You know, I just finally brought up the Jews in some way or another. And then he started defending Jews and saying that, oh, I think I was saying that they were controlling what was in academia. And he started going on about how that was not true in his university. And he's been a university professor for all these years. He knows all the other university, you know, he associates with all of this, and he doesn't ever found any Jewish, Jewish domination of anything. And then he started talking about how the Jews are so intelligent and brilliant and contributed to science. And he even said, and somebody else commented on this, that, Leonardo da Vinci was a Jew, and you know, that's not true. The thing with him is that he's open-minded and open to everything except when it comes to Jews, or, you know, telling the truth about
Jews.
Is he
himself Jewish?
No, he's not. And
is he married to a Jew?
I don't think so. He's real liberal. And he's
I've listened to his stuff. I mean, I've listened to him for years. I mean, I know I've listened to a lot of stuff he has.
Yeah, you're familiar with him, you're saying.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I read this whole thing about how politics affects revisionism that you have on your webpage. I read that whole thing too. I mean, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't. I'm kind of wondering how to actually fit this in. See. You know, I started by talking about him because he came out saying that he came out with some kind of Holocaust revisionist type statements, and then his friend Kevin Barrett made a big deal out of it and announced it. And they're both associated with Veterans Today, which I think is a very bad website and would like to take away. You know, it's
compromised. It sounds like it's been compromised.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. So, but they're very liberal, and they wouldn't speak against multiculturalism, and they don't like white supremacists like they called me. But I had some things to say because of an email exchange I got involved in. So I wrote about it, and then I did a program about it. So I don't blame him for trying to come back at me, but the way he did it, he had a program. I think it was it June 5th or something like that? And he brought in two people to say bad things about me, kind of. And they're mostly just kind of making fun of me and trying to ridicule me. But he made a lot of false statements. And that was, he said that where am I at here? Well, he said he brought on this Fabrio Pasquale De Fabrizio, and I looked him up. He had him on in the first hour, and this Pasquale De Fabrizio was telling Fetzer. Fetzer asked him to listen to my program that was about Fetzer. Kind of, it was really mostly about Kevin Barrett, but Fetzer got involved in it too, and so naturally. Pasquale was going to say, oh, what a terrible show, what a terrible person she is, and so on, and that's what he did. But, you know, I looked him up to see, and he had been on Fetzer's program for the first time in 2011, January 2011. And he brought him on because he was involved in the JFK conspiracy, you know, on these forums that they have on the internet. And he was he said he was a senior contributor to this forum, a senior contributor to a forum on JFK. And he's supposed to talk about Carolyn Yeager and you know, and Holocaust revisionism. He doesn't know anything about it. But I wondered about his name, see, Pasquale Di Fabrizio. So I looked that up, and there is a Pasquale Di Fabrizio who's advertised as Shoemaker to the Stars. He's in Hollywood or L.A., and he's got a website about how he's made the shoes for this movie and that movie and so on. And it has nothing to do with this guy because he's in his 70s already. But this fellow, as Fetzer introduced him, was a said he was born and raised in L.A., still lives in L.A., so he's from there. I don't know what his real name is, but he took this guy's name, you know, to be like a pseudonym. Since he didn't want to give his real name, and he's a licensed private investigator for insurance companies specializing in like workers' compensation fraud cases and so on. And he's been interested in the JFK conspiracy and recently became interested in 9/11. But so he's a friend of, you know, he and Fetzer get along real well. So he brings him on in the first hour, and he said a lot of silly things that he doesn't know anything. He said that I was, figured I was a plant or a stooge working for the Zionists. And this is the same thing Gordon Duff always says. So, you know, these people, they come up with this whenever there's somebody like us who won't stand for what they're doing, you know, and speaks up about it. They call us a plant, for the Zionists, which is very funny. Go ahead.
How do they feel, because you probably know, this is a good question you should ask them, how do they feel about Michael Collins' Piper book about Final Judgment?
Yeah, the pot calling the kettle black, yeah.
I mean, I'm just curious, because Michael Collins, Piper, every time he goes to those conferences, they don't invite him. He tries to go, or they won't invite him, and he wrote probably the most controversial book on the Kennedy assassination. So my question to Fetzer is, what do you feel about this book?
Well, that's right. I think I never hear Jim Fetzer talking about Michael Collins Piper's book. Do you?
I think it'd be a great thing No, I never have. And that's what I'm curious, because Piper said he went to one of those conferences and they wouldn't let him give a talk. They wouldn't let him on the stage.
Yeah.
So to me, those conferences have been compromised.
Oh, yeah. I think so. See, and what I've come to think about Fetzer, you know, back in 2007, 2006, you know, I was looking at, after I got interested in 9/11, and then, you know, JFK stuff again went over. And, you know, I saw Fetzer, and I thought he was just great at that time. You know, I thought, oh, this guy's really devoted himself to these things. And I was, you know, properly impressed, like he expects people to be, and most people are. But today, I think that he, you know, is... So many people have pointed out that he's been a disruptive influence. I think we're getting a call here. He's been a disruptive influence, in the 9/11 truth movement by bringing in all kinds of extraneous and crazy things. And now that the my concern with him, you see, the only reason I have talked about him is that now that the 9/11 truth movement has been pretty much stulted and stunted and not going anywhere because of all these theories that have been brought into it that he's helped to do, and people have accused him of being a disinformationist. A lot of just look it up, just Google it, and you'll find a whole bunch of it. Now he's ready to embrace Holocaust revisionism and maybe move into Holocaust revisionism and do the same thing. Because
over
I think
my dead body.
Yeah, well, that's the way we'd have to think about it, because they want to come in to Holocaust revisionism with all their Jew friendliness. And there's a lot of them. And there's a lot of good revisionists who don't have a policy. You know, they don't want to speak anti-Jew because they think it would destroy their credibility, you know, and then they would be attacked on that. And they want to keep it, just into revisionism, but if so they don't go there. And but people like him then, you know, he thinks he's on the side with all these good revisionists, and they come in, but they make it very clear. Like, for example, he said when he had Pasquale talking to him, and he decided I was a white supremacist. And then Pasquale says, Jews are the same as any other ethnic group. He said he refused to believe all Jews are bad. He says, Italians, now you're Italian, so listen to this. He is Italian. I don't know what his name is. But Italians in the mafia is the same as Jewish Zionists. Actually, he said, talking about the Italian mafia is no more anti-Italian than talking about criminal Jewish people is anti-Semitic. And Fetzer said, oh, nice parallel. I like that. That's really good. Because they're actually, both of them were saying that there's just some bad Jews, just like there's some bad Italians, there's some bad this or bad that, you know, and it's never it's never all the people. And we just made the point in the first half that the biggest problem is that these people work together as a unit, and that's why they're so powerful. So, you know, you can't hide from that.
Carol, can I get my viewpoint on that?
Yes.
About that? See, I get the same thing. My friend, a friend of mine says, oh, not all Jews are bad, you know, this or that and this and that. I said, listen, here's the deal. See, a lot of, there might be some good Jews out there that have good hearts, you know, they live good lives, but here's the problem with the Jews that I have, and it can be with anybody too. The Jews as a whole work together that they don't criticize each other. All right. So now when you show them that there's something wrong with the Holocaust, that there's some big issues with it, you think they would jump, you know, to say, oh, wow, less people died. That's great. You know, they would go along with you. But no, they don't. So what they do is that they're cowards. They don't want to speak up, because if they speak up, they're going to be ostracized from the tribe. All right. And they're going to have issues, too. So the Jews, I look at them when someone says they're not all bad. I said they're bad because they don't speak up against bad things. And that's how I look at them. So, you know, if I find a Jew out there that believes in what I believe and goes along with what I go along with, then I'll say, wow, there's a good Jew. But if he's going to take the side of the tribe that he belongs to, then I have no respect for them. That's how I feel about it.
You haven't found one yet. You know, one good one, technically. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. They have to come by.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Do you want to say more?
No, but I'm just saying, like, you know, they're very hard to come by because, you know, they always will defend the tribe somewhere down the line, and that's not a good thing. Hey, I'm Italian, okay? Now, the mafia, I don't care for the mafia. I don't like the tactics they use. I will speak out against them. I don't defend myself being Italian, have my Italian roots. If there's some rotten Italians out there, I'm going to speak against them, okay? But the Jews, it doesn't work that way.
Never. And Ian, even in the legal profession, when you try to get a Jewish person, I mean, you don't see them defending people like us who are fighting illegal immigration. They won't even jump on the bandwagon. They won't even touch the subject.
Very few, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
they know
right.
Their lives will be ruined.
Yeah, and then in the... Well, then, you know, just finish this up, this part up. Like I said, it was mostly about Kevin Barrett, and there was an experience with Kevin Barrett and I in the past, which, and then what came up in the present, and that's what it was all about. But, Fetzer said, that Yeager said she gave information to Kevin Barrett, and he didn't change his mind. She expected him to listen to her. See, these are some of the lies he's telling. He prides himself on being such a great researcher, and yet he just took what he wanted from this, and he didn't talk to Kevin at all about it. He just decided that that's what, you know, that's how he would characterize it. But actually, Kevin Barrett did not say anything about this since then, like Fetzer has. Because Kevin Barrett knows that what I said was absolutely true, and the whole thing is absolutely true, and he's just, you know, letting it go. But Fetzer comes along, and he's characterizing it differently. So, you know, my program or my post either was not about telling Kevin Barrett that he had to listen to me. It was not that at all. And so Fetzer just decided to make it into that. So what does that remind you of? You know, who does that remind you of, and what when you misread and you mishear what people say and you put your own spin on it and then put it out there?
Well, that's the Jews do that all the time.
Yeah, and communists too. So he says they go together.
Right.
And so, you know, again, in all these ways, Fetzer is doing that psychological thing called transference, where he's taking what he does, because he also said that I was so vain and so arrogant on this show that I thought that it was just amazing. Well, he's known for being vain and arrogant. That's one of his defining characteristics, and for being very grandiose and talking about himself.
Well, I think, Carol, the fact that, I mean, you stick to your guns, and that's what you do. I mean, you've taken on, I've listened to every single one of your shows, I mean, other than the last couple of weeks. And believe me, you stand by what you believe in, which is good. I mean, you ask the right questions, you delve further, you put these people on the spot that deserve to be put on the spot, and then I wouldn't see anything wrong on your end.
Right. But Carol, here's the way I kind of look at all this, and this is the way I do my stuff. I don't care about anybody else, what they say, how they say it, how they feel about me. I do my own thing, and if there's something that they say that's good, I use it. If they say something bad against me, I don't even care. I won't even deal with it, because I have a mission, and I don't want my mission to be disrupted by anybody else, and I don't quite care who they are. So I would just, you know, say to you is, I wouldn't even give them the time of day. Just go on with your mission. Do what you have to do. If there's something they say that's good, you agree with, you agree. If you don't agree, then you don't even bother with it. I mean, that's how I live my life now, because there's what happens with the Jews is, ultimately, they want all of us bickering and fighting amongst ourselves anyway. So why even bother? Why even give them the chance? Just do your mission. You do a great job with your mission. Just do your mission and stay on track. Don't let anybody distract you, because, you know, if you have to kick every dog that comes after you when you're walking
down
the
street. Well, it isn't that. Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, Joe, when there are certain times when you have to answer things. You can't just let somebody say things and you don't answer. But I answer honestly, and I look back and find out what really, you know, I don't make things up and I don't spin things. For example, in the second hour, then he brought on another fellow that was friendly with him. Of course, I've got you two who are friendly with me, but I would do it on my own. I would be saying this on my own anyway. Mark Elsis, who accused me of grabbing his email from someone else's list. And I called her on it. He said she denied it. He's talking about several years ago. And later, he said she denied it. Later, she admitted it. Big guffaw from Fetzer, you know. That shows what kind of a person she is. Well, you know, selective memory in these things. You know, this...
Right.
I recall this, and I recall talking to him about it, because I was at Reason Radio, and he was he sent some comments there about the program a few times, and I can't remember exactly. They were kind of friendly, but also wanting me to change some things or something. So I won't say, because I don't really remember well enough. But I do remember that this, after I thought about it. And, you know, somebody had sent me an email with a number of names on it. You know how that you put a whole bunch of names and CC. And this discussion went on for a while, back and forth with all these people on it. And then I was starting my mailing list, I think, at the time, maybe something like that. And I thought, oh, I should take some of these people and put them on my mailing list, because these were all people who, you know, we're involved in the same kind of thinking, you know, the same type of persuasion, basically. So I did that. And then Elsa somehow came around and said that, well, how did I get his email and so on? But he didn't care about it because, you know, you can take yourself off. I would have taken him off. I mean, my mailers say, you know, unsubscribe, you know, very easy to find. Anybody can unsubscribe. So anybody who would accuse me of taking their name, you know, when they didn't want it taken and taking it from somewhere and putting it on my email list, all they have to do is unsubscribe from it. But he never did. And, you know, he said on that program, I still get her emails, and he listens to the shows and all this stuff. So he wants to be on it, but at the same time, he wants to say this in such a way that helps Fetzer, you know, say, oh, yeah, she's just that kind of a person. So, you know, these things are kind of, you know, it kind of grates on you. You want to just simply answer it.
I understand.
Yeah. So,
well, that's why we write to the newspaper. We see articles we don't agree with, and we write in and we try to, you know, set them straight, you know?
Yeah, and I get tired of writing things, so sometimes I like to just say it on the radio program because it's easier to do that than have to write it all out and send it to people.
Right.
But this is, but I had a point here in that, Mark Elsis has said that he has come a long way. He's also complaining that I didn't ask him to be a guest on my show, which I never have, because, you know, he thinks that he's an expert on Holocaust, and therefore I definitely should have asked him, but I didn't. Well, you know, I don't need him to talk about Holocaust on my show. I didn't get a very good we didn't hit it off all that well when we were emailing, so that's the last I heard of him. That was a couple years ago, and so he's still, now he pops up again, see. But there's nothing wrong with him except that his background, he grew up and lived in New York City and always lived in New York City until, you know, he was quite a lot older and then not all that long ago, maybe in the 80s or 90s or something, moved away. So he's a New York type. I looked him up and found a picture of him. Real, real pale white guy, real cheerful guy. But he has this website about love, okay? And he was always kind of a Love Earth. I think his website was Love Earth, and he had some other ones. But he said that he was very, very liberal, and he slowly switched over quite a bit. But he doesn't like being my anti-homosexual stand. He doesn't see anything wrong with homosexuals. In fact, he said, I think they're more intelligent and nicer people than other people, maybe because of all the persecution they've been through, he said. So, that, you know, you see there, that's where he's coming from. And then he says that, he's come around even to some anti-multiculturalism stances, because he does recognize now that white people are being targeted and that it is a kind of a genocide going on, and so white people need to be defended. So he is slowly coming around, but still, because Fetzer has had him on his program once to talk about his Holocaust article. And Fetzer asked him to come on and talk about this in particular, because he said, I listened to the show, to Carolyn's show last night, and these are my impressions of it. So, you know, he's doing this for Fetzer. And neither one of these people is really an expert on anything that they're, you know, on me or what they're talking about. So, that's all. I know the point I wanted to make was that it's political. Oh, yeah, Fetzer. Okay, here's what we can talk about now. Fetzer was saying, Carolyn Yeager said that it's political. You know, I did that program saying how politics affects revisionism. And I do think that those who are on the left want revisionism to go only so far and no further, and have a very different idea about what Holocaust revisionism is than those who are who would say would be on the right, would be more open to changing the dominant political the dominant political mandate that we're under today. So that's where the politics comes in. In every revisionist, their politics plays a part. Well, Fetzer kind of twisted that around, saying that, oh, I said something stupid, and he made it sound stupid. Like, I thought, you know, it was all political. It's not political because different people are all revisionists and they have different politics. Okay, but would you agree? This whole topic about Holocaust revisionism and the effect that politics plays in it, and where, you know, how it can be, how disinfo and can get into it because of people's different politics. I think that's something
that I'd like to answer. I'll answer that one. I'll
go ahead.
Take a stab at that one.
Yeah.
I don't think it's political as much as economical. If you're a real diehard revisionist and you really stand by what's really right, you're going to be economically boycotted. So why would these revisionists, I mean, who so-called call themselves revisionists, go all the way with it? They won't have jobs. I'm just telling you. Okay, I mean, I look at my life and what the Jews did to me with my business. They pretty much came after me, and because I used to work for all Jews. Okay, most of all, my clients were rich, good, you know, Jews that had money. All right, so now they all stopped using me. That's how it works. It's not politics. It's economics.
Let me just interject real quickly that it's not the people who would talk, who, you know, will not admit it or something. It's the people who are in revisionism, like people who have come out and made statements about it and said, yeah, you know, who are not afraid to be in it. But amongst those people, you have people on the political spectrum, and people who are on Fetzer's political spectrum and Kevin Barrett have a different idea of a different limit to where revisionism can go.
Well, but that's my point. The limit is economical because these guys have to pay bills. If they really, really take a true hard stand for revisionism, they're going to find themselves out the door. And that's how it works. Okay, there's no compromise with it. The Jews run everything. Okay? And there's no way you're going to have a job that you're not going to be affected by it in some way if you take a real strong stand. All right, that's all I'm saying is if you come out like, you know, like I tell you, I'm just speaking from experience. And of course, unless you have a business that's, you know, you don't have to worry about them. I mean, maybe there is a business out there you don't have to worry about them. But you have to be independent, though, and work for yourself and not have to worry about those things. So I look at it. It's political, economical. I mean, that's the way I look at it, you know.
Mhm. Okay, who was that? Jim?
That was Jim. Yeah. Yeah.
What about Joe?
Well, I agree with that too. That we're finding, you know, the Bible says, you know, that those who don't have the mark of the beast won't be able to buy and sell. And I'm wondering, you know, even if the Jews are the biblical beast of the book of Revelation, because like I said, if you don't do things their way, you will be economically
shipwrecked,
boycotted. Now how far it goes, that's another story. You know, I mean, how far, you know, what bothers me, and I think I've read some of the stuff on your site, I'm not sure, but what happens is when you start taking a revisionist stand or you're against the Holocaust, they look at you like you're mentally ill. So when you try to say something about something else, like you have an opinion, they will use that against you on this other opinion. Like, he doesn't have the right viewpoint of the Holocaust. How can he be saying this about this topic? Like, you know, Agenda 21 or something like that. In other words, they take it into that next thing because they think you're mentally deranged to have the other view in the first place, you know, and that's what bothers me is they can use that really to slander and defame you when it has nothing to do with anything else you do in your life.
Right.
You know,
like politically, they ruined us in this town.
Oh yeah.
They took, we were town meeting members, and they came right against us and got us out of town meeting. They got people to run against us who have no interest, who care. They don't even care. But just to get us out of town meeting because of our Holocaust stands and views, that's what they did. I mean, can you imagine
running people against you, not because of your politics, but because of your viewpoint on the Holocaust and your viewpoint on the Jewish people in general. They said, we cannot have these people at town meeting representing us if these people believe that way. And I said, oh, wow, this is unbelievable, because we separate our views. I mean, my Holocaust view doesn't come up at town meeting. I mean, I deal with my town meeting, political stuff. It's a whole together different thing. But yet they put you all in one boat, and they try to get rid of you. And that's just what they do.
Yeah. You try to do something good, and they get rid of you.
Yeah.
I couldn't run for dog catcher in this town.
Okay. Well, it's like this. When you have people who are who have discovered that they've realized that there's too many lies in this Holocaust story, and they don't like also many more liberal type people don't like the putting people in jail and the lack of free expression, free speech about it. They see that, and they also don't like Israel. They don't like Israel, because it's a very right-wing and racist country, and they don't like racism. So you get these people, and you get all these revisionists together, doing their revisionist thing. And some of them deal with I don't think there were gas chambers, and I don't think there were 6 million dead. That's all a big exaggeration. And there were a lot of Allied war crimes, but who's responsible for the Allied war crimes? I mean, they don't want to go all the way with any of this. So they want to kind of moderate this and let it be talked about, and sort of let's bring this Holocaust down under control and make it not the big thing that they had it all these years. And let's let people talk about it if they want to. And then we have these debates and so on, just like a political debate. And then and that's it. They really don't want to go as far, although that would be good. I suppose what I should see, as people have told me, that everybody who wants to, moderate the Holocaust story is doing a good work and is helpful. And if they don't want to go as far with it as I think needs to be gone with it, that's okay. At least you get to that point, and then you can go on. But they think the point to get to is that the Jews are kind of given a little slap on the hand and said, well, look what you did. You've been lying about all this. But that's it, because there was just a few of them at the top who were responsible for this. And then we just, still have this idea that the Nazis treated the Jews very badly, country like Third Reich Germany was wrong and was racist, and we're not for that. So they're still multicultural, they're still non-racial, they're still anti-racist and anti-fascist, but they just don't have this embarrassing Holocaust story staring them in the face. And I think that's a big part of it for somebody like Jim Fetzer. He realizes that when he's trying to break into all of these conspiracy theories, these big hoaxes, that there's this Holocaust that he has refused to address all these years, along with Barrett. And that was part of the point that I was trying to, amongst other people, trying to get Barrett to look at it, and he wouldn't do anything about it. He still really won't. But all these, this is embarrassing to a lot of these academics today, and they realize they have to do something.
The guy that runs Skeptic, I don't know, have you ever heard of magazine, Skeptic magazine? I emailed him asking, why don't you do something on the Holocaust? Because he's always into this facts and figures and
What magazine is this?
Skeptic.
Yeah, okay.
Skeptic magazine.
Skeptic,
the debunked thing.
Yeah, the guy's either...
Yes, I know.
He's, I forget what his last name is.
Shermer. Michael Shermer.
Right. And the point is, he won't, I can guarantee it, and I mean, I'm probably right. He won't take the topic on, because we're dealing with the Holocaust from a going to school math issue. How can you burn so many bodies, like 4 million bodies in a year or 2 years? Is it possible? The mathematics isn't there. The gas chambers, stuff like this. So if he had to take that topic on, he'd have to answer it from a logical, professor type of answer, using facts and figures from MIT and all that. And that's why he won't take the Holocaust on. And this is because they know they're going to have to give some real answers with math and figures, and the figures don't add up. When they tell all the people, the bodies were burned and gassed and this and that, it's just nonsense. It's just absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
So I don't know. They don't want to take it. They cut it off because they know their careers are going to be.
Well, that's right. See, and that's why I call it political, because you've got Shermer talks about.
You're right. I agree.
Kind of talks about the Holocaust. So you have all these people, talking about various people talk about the Holocaust, but they want to keep it, contained. A lot of the people, the left wing people, they want to keep it contained, and that's for political reasons only, not for any kind of scientific or maybe even economic would always enter in, too.
I'll give you another example. All across the country, they have what's called the Patches, patch.com, and people write in and they put articles up and they discuss stuff. Well, lo and behold, we have what's called the Framingham Patch, and in that Framingham Patch, we actually started getting into interesting conversations that they didn't want to go to. In fact, if people did a research on the Framingham Patch now and search for our names, you'll see all the conversations are still there, but we're not on. They kicked us off because we started talking about Israel, and Israel being an apartheid, murderous state that they are. And we just made a couple of references about what Israel's doing. And the guy that runs the patch all over the country, he was pissed. And they technically kicked us off the Framingham patch. That doesn't mean I can't get on another patch, under another email. But that's what they do. See, the patch is supposed to be for conversations, discussion, but when you go that way to Israel and you start discussing Israel and then you find out who runs that patch in your town, you're going to find out it's quite possibly a Jew.
Right.
Because they're into everything.
Right. When you cross the line, they deal with you.
Yeah, and they kicked us off that patch, that Simeon patch. But I went on it the other day and saw, you can go on it, but you can't post. I saw all our posts. If you do an email search for our names, we got some pretty, but everybody attacked us. They call us bigots, racists, haters, and it's actually comical.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you get people bothering you when you're just going around town?
It's happened. We were doing it mostly a couple of years ago when we were really into the immigration stuff. We'd be on a corner videotaping, something. And people would be going by, they'd give us the finger. The immigrant community is a very volatile, they're very hateful people. People don't get it. They think they're all full of love. Yeah, they're all full of love, all right.
It's kind of good that there's two of you. I'm not trying to make it seem like it's easy, but, you ought to be used to it by now. And it might be kind of interesting and fun in a sense, if people are say something, you can say something back. Or how does that go? How do you react?
Well, I love it. Jimmy's got my back. I got his back.
I didn't catch
it worked that. It worked out well.
Okay. Well, we've only got, I suppose it says four, but maybe it's three. 4 or 3 minutes left, so I'd like to give you both. I've talked a lot, but I couldn't make out all that well what you were saying, although I generally do understand it. That's probably not the reason. I'm sorry I kind of pushed my issues in on your time, but I'd like to give you both an opportunity to add any last words that you have and to plug your sites, however you want to plug them, because I know you've got quite a few things to plug.
Well, my website has a lot of stuff dealing with immigration. The Holocaust actually is more. There's more stuff on that. So it's ccfiile.com, and there's a ton of stuff there to read. I got some of your stuff up there, and it's really good. It's probably a pretty extensive site for what it is. And then on YouTube, my videos, if you get onto YouTube, just put JJRIZO and you'll see my videos there. And then I'm starting to put them up on a site called Daily Motion, oneword.com, and it's under JJRIZO there too also. So, I mean, if people want to look at our videos, make comments or whatever, then that's fine. But YouTube, I'm getting a real good following on YouTube about the Holocaust. It's really good. I'm getting really good comments from all over the world. The YouTube JJ Rizzo. I got some really funny ones. I did a real funny one with Rabbi Schechelmeister. I dressed up like the rabbi, and I did a little funny thing about a tattoo. You can get on the site and look at what I did there. So I got some good videos there.
Yeah, and I heard about that one.
And hopefully the people can get on, because they're short videos. The ones on YouTube are short, 15 minutes or less. And, you could hear all the things I've been talking about there.
Okay, I'm not going to hear the cue. It said 60 seconds. We've got 60 seconds to go. So did you want to add anything, Joe?
Well, no, we're continuing the fight. We're taking the stuff that you give us, Carolyn, and we use it and we apply it in our community.
Well, that's right. I want to commend you too. 30 seconds now, because I think as I said ago, I was so impressed. You know, the way you guys work is very, very good and very courageous. And we need more people doing that. We just need more people. Period. And I want to thank you so much, Joe and Jim Rizzoli from Framingham, Massachusetts. Go and look at the vids and so on. And I want to thank you for being my guest. And now we've got our music coming on, which we don't hear, but it is on. And I want to thank everybody for listening and say goodbye for today. Come back next week.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.